will be showing how CGI has used MapD's open source and GPU-powered SQL database to provide interactive access to the national water model predictions for stream flow, velocity, ground inundation, saturation, from present conditions to up to 30 days in advance for entire US, which means what are the conditions at the time the model was run. Then we have a prospective view, which tells us how conditions will change going forward in time. And then there's a retrospective view, which tells how predictions evolve up to any given period in time. Water conditions can be tracked both in space and time together as the storm progresses across the country. The workshop will cover introduction to national water model, the various time perspectives in national water model, our current work with National Water Model and MapD, and how we use the Amazon AMI to work with National Water Model, then data flow from the water model to MapD, the various table optimization we did in MapD to help with memory optimization, then database switches and memory. Then we'll show some live visualizations in MapD Immerse dashboard, which will cover the steam flow perspectives of present condition, prospective conditions, and retrospective conditions. Then we'll show the steam flow aggregate by county and ground inundation for the area of Texas. I'll ask Josh to give a brief background of why we needed a GPU-powered database to work with GIS data.
All right, so we're gonna tag team a little bit here, but so when we were first talking with Aaron about, you know, do you know of some big data that we could use a GPU database for? And we said, well, there's this model, and it covers 2.7 million stream reaches in the US. And his first response, not notably, was, well, that isn't very big. And I said, well, then there's this grid across the US. And you think, well, image, you know, United States, that's not so big either. Then we started saying, okay, so there's 2.7 million, right? But there's 300 million of these grid points that go into it, and there's time. And there's not only time, but there's time, there's time, and there's time. And it starts to add up really quick. So not only is it a question of spatial resolution, so right now this model uses the medium resolution National Hydro Dataset. So it's a little under 3 million. When it goes to the new high-res data, which is what's available currently, that goes to 30 million reaches, all of the smaller streams that were not included in the medium resolution. Now, this model is then making predictions, you know, at a certain period of time, but it's predicting what's the current conditions, what's the condition in the future, up to 30 days hourly. So you start adding that up, and you start getting billions of records. So it doesn't sound like much, but space and time do wonderful things to increase the size of your data. So the other thing to think about is, you know, how does this relate to observations? You know, well, why are you, you know, figuring out the flow conditions in the present? You know, why can't you go and measure them? Well, models and observations are actually very close. Really, it's difference of the procedure you're using and the difference between the time that you're doing creating an estimate of a parameter such as flow or velocity and the time that that estimate is for. And so there's actually three senses of time that are involved in here. So you can do observations on 6,000 streams. There's approximately 6,000 physical gauges and water courses that give you an actual observation. That alone is a procedure because you're not measuring the flow. You're measuring, you know, the height on a stick in the river and then using a procedure to say, okay, this corresponds to this much flow at this one point that we've characterized it. And so all the model is doing is saying what values for the flow in the other 2.6 million street reaches would be, if you went out and measured them. Although this is running on a Cray supercomputer, it's a lot cheaper than doing all those measurements. And then it's an easy step to say, okay, now we've said what they could be right now, what could they be in the future? And you just keep running it. So one of the ways that we can explore this is to be aware of at least two of these three times. So the valid time, for example, when weather data goes into the model, you know, when the model starts, it has all the data that it's going to get to make its predictions. That's the valid time. The phenomenon time is we're making a prediction for 10 days in the future, for example. And so the phenomenon time, when we measure or predict that something will be the case in the world. The result time is the monkey wrench, when the model takes so long to run that if you're not doing a prediction far enough in the future, you've already passed the phenomenon time by the time it comes out of the machine. And the longer range models actually take longer because that's less of a problem. So that's more of the model mechanics. But what we're really emphasizing here is the importance of not only time and space, but multiple senses of time and space. This one is yours? Yeah.
So what we saw over time that computing needs increase not only with the scale, but also the velocity of the model output and other data which need to be processed. They also vary depending on the hypothesis one is trying to test, the model which is going to be employed, and number of interpreters we are going to work with. Also, parallel computing can address volume, but may not produce the throughput to support interactive interpretation. Therefore, GPU-based computing can increase that throughput through efficient parallel processing. Specific computational components assembled in one tool chains provide us this kind of flexibility to do model visualization as well as analysis. So this is what we have been working with, is the National Water Model. It generates prediction for hydrological condition across US, for present conditions, for 18 hours in future, 10 days in future, and 30 days in future. The prediction is done for 2.7 million stream reaches and about 300 million surface grid points across US for 1 kilometer and 250 meter spacing. This model runs on a Cray supercomputer. It takes as input the weather models, the surface models, and the stream models. The total output is about 90 gigs per day, ranging from 4 gigs to 65 gigs for different model types. The NWM provides with a viewer which can be used to view pre-generated images for recent model output, and there's another viewer which could be used to view the stream flow images for the present conditions. These are the time perspectives we talk about in NWM, and you'll see a lot of them when we'll show the live demo how we have used the different time perspectives to create our visualization. First is like how the present conditions evolve over 10 days. Then we have a prospective view which shows prediction over 10 days from the start of the period. Then we have a retrospective view which shows how the conditions evolve for the 10th day prediction from the start date to present conditions. Then there's another thing we wanted to do, which is not in the presentation, but most probably we'll cover it in FOSS4G, is the combination of surface inundation combined with the stream flow. So this describes our current work we did with MapD, and all of this is mostly complete. The first was to develop data download procedure. That is an automatic script which goes to the NWM website every day, gets at the data, stores it, and then upload it to the MapD database. For this, we configured and installed a MapD 1 GPU instance on Amazon. Thereafter, we run our scripts to load the stream midpoints and the and the grid midpoint geometries, because we wanted to store the geometries separately from the model parameters to do some kind of optimization of the memory of GPU. Then we load the stream flow, velocity, soil inundation, and saturation outputs from the model for present condition, that is once per day, and 1 to 10 day of prediction over a 10-day period. For the beginning of 2018, we choose from 1st January to 10 January 2018 because we had some interesting weather phenomena in US. There were some storms across different parts of US which we wanted to visualize and see how well they have been predicted from with the National Water Model. Then what we did is create the SQL views and table joins with the stream coordinates and the model output values to create different visualization in the MapD Immerse dashboard. Doing all this, we learned through various optimization tricks, GPU utilities, and the configuration of switches, which could be very helpful when you are working with a GPU-based database. So this is the Amazon MapD AMI. There are other ways to launch and get MapD running, but this is the one we used. We use the community edition. There is also an enterprise edition, which has more features than the community edition. But right now we are working with the community edition, and we have a P2 XLarge instance, which is one GPU instance, one K80 GPU, and about 12 EC2 with four cores. And this one is charges us about 90 cents per hour, and there is a separate storage available with it, which is about 10 cents per hour. So it's on the cheaper side, and it's provides only one. But there are possibilities to scale up instant GPU instances to more than one. With what you can see on the left, the different type of EC2 instances available with the community edition. And it's a one-click launch. So as soon as you select your region, you select your keys and all that stuff, the configuration you want for your instance is just click on the one-click launch, and it will be up and running with MapD pre-installed in it. This is very interesting how we got the NWM files to MapD, because NWM dataset is available as NetCDF. And currently, MapD doesn't have a way to directly upload NetCDF to MapD. So we tried several methods. So we tried the various GIS libraries, but then the one which worked very fast and efficiently for us was Pandas data frame. So currently our files are in Amazon AWS, Amazon S3, sorry. These are our files. So we have a harvesting script which runs daily. It goes and fetches the files from the website and pushes it to our Amazon S3 storage. Then we have a scripts which are, so we right now have 2 months of test data at 6 hour interval for present and predicted conditions stored in S3. Then we have a script which does pre-processing and loading to MapD. So we get a NetCDF, the script changes it to X array, which is an n-dimensional array. Then it is changed to a Pandas data frame, which is then changed, which then uses PyMapD and PyArrow to push it to a table to a MapD database. So, and this is done separately for the geometries and separately for model output parameters. One of the limitations is that data is currently loaded on disk. Then it is sent column-wise into GPU or CPU memory. And since we have one GPU instance, so we get about 11 to 12 gigs of data memory to work with, which is a little bit less for this kind of huge data, but that's where table optimization and memory optimization comes into play when you have lesser GPU memory and you are working with larger data sets. And the most interesting part about this loading process, it is so fast, it only takes a few minutes to get gigs of files into MapD tables. With other libraries, it was taking us hours to load this file into MapD. But once you move to data frames, everything becomes very easy. And it's easier to customize these data frames to whatever you want as a table in MapD. So another interesting thing we did was table optimization to make the best use of the GPU memory available to us. And as Aaron told, that MapD is a column-based RDBMS, and it has no indexes. It manages data on disk, and then that data is loaded into CPU and GPU memory as needed. GPU memory is more limited than the CPU memory, so it was important for us to size and number the data columns we were going to use to create a visualization. Both the number and the length of column to be queried is important and needs to be carefully planned for optimal use of the GPU memory. Large data set may be loaded into MapD, and then a subset is queried to just create a smaller working columns that fit into the GPU memory. And this is a technique we have used for most of our visualization. Our original data set is actually very large, but then we have created subqueries to optimize our GPU memory for very fast visualization. Another thing we did was our configure the switches in the MapD configuration. So what happened that when we were trying to create views that have joins versus tables that have joins, we found that we were hitting this exception every time, that query couldn't keep the entire working set of column in the GPU memory. So we had to go and change some switches in the MapD configuration so that our query parameters fit into the GPU memory. And the two switches which we optimized were, first is enable doc watchdog. So what this switch does is, it tries to predict whether your query will fit into your available GPU memory. And if it does not, it stops the query there. And then the other one we did was allow CPU retry. So this allows query that do not fit into the GPU memory to fall back and be executed on the CPU memory. So for some of our memories, which were not, some of our queries, which were not fitting into the GPU memory, we had them fall back on the CPU, and they were executed on the CPU memory, which is larger than our available GPU memory. There are other tips for optimization which one could use, and they are available on the MapD community forum, which I find very useful because there are other users who are sharing their tips on optimization of the GPU memory. So I would highly recommend to use this. Then I'll ask Josh to join me in showing some live demo. We have canned videos, but we'd like to start with the demo. Hopefully they should work.
Yeah, this may be tempting fate. We did this last night. We spared people the videos and looked at these live. And on the other hand, we're not doing this through my phone. So this is an advance on a number of demos that I've done. So this is what you're seeing here is this immerse client. It's JavaScript and web server staged browser client that provides data management. So you can look at the tables that have been loaded into MapD, this MapD instance. It provides a SQL editor that lets you write SQL queries in the dialect of SQL that MapD presently supports. And then it lets you create dashboards, which are combinations of different visualizations. So that's what we'll go through here. And I'll emphasize that there was this interesting, really education for me. You know, I'm used to databases, normalize, you know, get everything together in the fewest tables so that the SQL queries are easy to write. And we had to totally change this because, so MapD initially loads stuff onto disk, however much disk you have. There's a air pollution project that's, you know, starting with 3 terabytes of data. No problem, just throw it in there. But in a form that you can then create the things that you want to visualize, at least in the CPU memory. So, for example, this has about 11 gigabytes of GPU memory. It has available, I think it's 48 gigabytes of CPU memory, and then, you know, hundreds of gigabytes of disk space. So we could just load the output from National Water Model onto disk, but then we had to say, what kinds of queries can we run in that CPU memory, right? We don't care about preparing stuff in microseconds. We just need to have it run so that we're ready with artifacts, with columns that will fit into the GPU memory. So that's process of all the different queries in here was to set this up. So now we have a set of columns that we can work with. And I'll just look at the present flow anomaly here. Remember, we talked about looking at the present prediction for each of 10 days, and then starting at day one, what did we predict going up 10 days? And then coming back at day 10, how far off were we back at the day one and getting closer? So let's start with this present flow anomaly. So this is stream flow in the US. Hopefully it will be. Yeah, very cool. So this is stream flow minus average stream flow for that 10-day period. And these are midpoints of all these stream reaches, but by the time we aggregate five to a point in this geographic heat map, it looks like streams from this distance. So right now, we also have here average anomaly flow by time, and that's the phenomenon time, right? And so we can look at everything together. So this is all the maximum values for the whole 10 days, or we can look at each of the periods of time. So this was January 1st, some heavy flow in the Mississippi, and the Columbia up here, going to January 2nd, changes as well. You can see differences between the smaller streams where there's more immediate precipitation and the larger streams that took a while for that precipitation to reach it. And we can go through here. Another interesting thing is you can look at the overall trend, right? Above average flow across the country to below average flow across the country. But that doesn't give you then the spatial patterns, which are what you need to know. You need to know the space and the time if you want to get out of the way of the flooding. So we can go on through each of these periods of time. More downstream in the Mississippi, more upstream in the Columbia, and so on. And we'll jump to day 10 and all sorts of activity out in California on January 10th. There were big storms and very diffuse, meaning it hadn't peaked in the large rivers. It was still above average flow in many of the small rivers. So this is something that's really interesting to work with, is this ability to link aggregate views with the map views and to filter. So I'll go to another dashboard here. So this is an example of looking at aggregation by county. So the geospatial data types and operators are still about to come out for MapD, but we can use its visualization language, Vega, which is based on D3, to say, well, what if we had this stuff stamped by county? Could we look at it? And so sure enough, we can aggregate these values by county for those same time periods and look at the, can look at the concentration in California, but by county for the same time periods. So one last dashboard. So we're still working on fitting this grid data, which is ponding on the surface and also depth to groundwater. But in this case, we can look at a map of all of the different combinations of valid time, you know, the model time and the phenomenon time here. And we can look, for example, at January 8th. We look back here. We didn't think much was going on. We get closer to the time that we're predicting for, and things start building up. And then finally, you know, it was within 4 days that the predictions started to resemble what actually happened in these areas. So once we have this data in and in a form that can be used, even though it's many millions of rows, we can interact with it quite energetically. And this is just a small sample of them. So let's go back to the conclusions.
as we have seen that the simulation and prediction model output for GIS data can be a big data challenge that is significant and separate from running of models. And it will be difficult to interpret this scale of data without having the proper tools for creating and running the model themselves. GPU-based data provides us with the tools to do not only the visualization and the handling of this data, but also the analysis. And MapD offers us good possibility for addressing this big data challenge in terms of GIS data. It is a cost-effective and flexible integration with other tools. And it has a lot of, what I find very interesting with MapD is you can handle it with any programming language you are comfortable with. You have Java connectors, you have Python, whatever you feel comfortable with. So it is very flexible in terms of how you want to communicate with MapD and out of MapD. And databases such as MapD, they require some kind of expertise to use them. I would say there's a learning curve when you start using it, but it's not that steep. And you become really comfortable once you know the backend of MapD. So what we have not discussed in this presentation is the MapD core, which is what I usually use when running my scripts. So as you see, this is an Amazon instance running. And you could SSH to this instance and run your scripts there. So all our harvesting, pre-processing, that's our ETL scripts are all running in the backend on these scripts. So apart from MapD Immerse, you can also use MapD Core, which has a language called MapD Quell, which is similar to SQL, to let you talk to the database directly. So I find MapD Core very, very useful in terms of doing the customizations which are not available from the Immerse dashboard directly. We have learned a lot learning from working with MapD and national water models, and we plan to apply this in future use cases. We have some projects in pipeline like the air quality data and some voting analysis which we want to do using MapD from our learning from national water model, which we might be presenting in future conferences. Then I want to share this our GitHub page. If you are interested in working with the national water model data, then all our scripts for extraction and load are here, available on the GitHub page. So you can find the harvesting script as well as the scripts to load the model data to MapD directly. Also, the other thing is we have drafted all our experiences of using MapD, the pros and cons, the limitations we faced and how we overcome them in the wiki page of this GitHub, which might be very useful when you are trying to use it for the first time. So this is all our first-hand experience using MapD. Then the MapD code itself is present on their GitHub and can be downloaded from here. Do you have something to talk about collaborations, Aaron? Mm-hmm. Yep, and then it's from my side. Thanks.